morning to all of you. Greet you in Jesus' name this morning. It is good to see all of you here. Bench is well filled. Good to be with the people of God and again dig into the Word and reflect on our calling, what it means to be a follower of Jesus, and also appreciate the emphasis in the devotional and in the Sunday school lesson of carrying the gospel to those around us. And we may have an opportunity, because of the recent events and the shooting of a person who was speaking truth, I believe our nation is maybe at an all-time high in being receptive, at least to hearing truth. And so what are we doing to carry that to those around us? Are we having those conversations? It's a challenge to me to not shrink back from speaking truth to people and taking that to the world around us. So may we ever be engaged in carrying the truth to the lost, shining light in the dark corners, and being the salt of the earth. For a message this morning, you can turn to the book of Esther. With the upcoming ordination, I've been thinking about leadership and thoughts centered around that. This is not really a qualification message, but I do want to share some thoughts on leadership. I want it to be broader in application, though, than just church leadership. I believe that there are many different areas of leadership. We have church, of course. We have fathers, leaders, fathers and mothers in the home. Leaders in the home, we have business leaders, school teachers, and many, many different places of responsibility, any place of responsibility for other people, or really any place where there's a relationship with another human involved. There's principles that guide us in those, in being successful in doing what's right in those areas. Leadership is influence. And how we use it determines whether we build or destroy. Now, the book of Esther has a main theme of God working to save his people from being wiped out by those who oppose them. And Esther is the main character in this story and in facilitating the deliverance of her people. There is a secondary theme, though, in this book that I have often gone back to when I consider scenarios that are happening with leadership in whatever function it may be, whatever area it may be. And there's some guiding principles that we find here in the secondary theme with two men. There was two men with great influence that produced drastically different results in the people they were over. And I found these contrasts to be helpful in discerning and understanding what makes good versus bad leadership. These two men are Haman, a prideful official of the Persian Empire, and Mordecai, a humble servant of God. And these stories offer a powerful contrast between godly leadership and self-serving ambition. And so this morning, I simply am going to go through this story. It's a rather simple message structure, and we're going to pick out qualities both in Haman that identify a self-serving leader, and then we want to look at Mordecai and understand what makes up humble servant leadership, at least from this story, from this perspective. We have an Old Testament story here that I've always found this book intriguing. It's a story that's interesting and intriguing. And so I want to highlight, we don't have time to go through the whole story. You can read that at your leisure, but I do want to highlight certain areas of it that help us understand the leadership qualities in this between these two men. I've titled the sermon, Perplexity or Prosperity? And that's taken from, there's two verses, and we'll read these. But there's two separate results, and we'll get to it, but there's one that says the city of Shushan was perplexed. And later on, we have the city of Shushan having light and joy and gladness. And so those two themes are in this scripture, and how we get to those is what I'd like to examine. So perplexity or prosperity? I want to start with Haman, and we're going to go to chapter 3. We're going to start in chapter 3 of the book of Esther. Now, we know in the beginning, we're in the wealthy Persian Empire. The king has put on a feast for all his governors and royalty princes. Queen Vashti is removed because she refuses to make a show of herself, and the king begins to search for another queen. And we have Esther coming into the story here, and she is part of the that process of selecting another queen. In Esther chapter 3, we have this king promoting Haman to the highest level in the kingdom next unto himself. And this is after the queen is selected. We're gonna back up and look at some of the of chapter 2 when we look at Mordecai, but we want to focus on Haman here. Haman, the self-serving leader who led with ambition and ego. I want to start by reading Esther chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. After these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand. For he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath, and he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai, that wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. And so we have Haman introduced. He's being promoted. He's given this second in command to the king. And rather than earn respect through his actions, he immediately sought recognition and demanded that all those under him bow down to him. And so the first quality I have is that a self-serving leader craves recognition. And he went for people bowing to him, and he found his identity in the status of his position and not in the substance. And so we see a person who desired the praise and the position and the other people bowing down to him, the lording over of those underneath him. And this self-serving recognition, craving recognition, suffered a major dent when Mordecai refused to bow. And we see him being enraged, full of wrath, because his ego demanded to be recognized. And so Haman craved recognition. Ego-driven leaders are easily threatened when recognition is not given. Secondly, he responded disproportionately to the offense. See here, rather than simply take up the issue with Mordecai, he sought to just seek revenge against everyone that was related or associated with Mordecai, his whole people, the Jews. And we see this anger drove him to wipe out anyone that was associated with Mordecai. And so we see a disproportionate response to the offense in this. I want to keep going here. Esther 3, verses 8 through 11. And Haman said unto the king Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore, it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it had pleased the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have the charge of the business to bring it into the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it unto Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the Jews' enemy. The king said unto Haman, the silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with thee as it seemeth good to thee. Now in this, his disproportionate response caused him to manipulate the king and misrepresent the people for power. In his quest to stamp out the offenders, to set right what he thought needed to be set, to put those in their place that were not recognizing him, he manipulated the king. He misrepresented the Jews to the king to convince him to allow them to destroy him. And we see an unethical quality of manipulation and playing politics and manipulation for power, for personal advantage. And all in this, there's a self-driving, self-exalting motive about Haman and his position and who he was. Unethical leaders use manipulation and play politics for personal advantage. And you see, he used whatever he could to accomplish his means. And it was about him. It was about his agenda. And it took in no regard for anyone else. We continue on. I want to go over to chapter 5. We have in between here the decree going out, and actually I want to catch verse 15 here. We'll come back to this, but the decree goes out, and the order that these people should be, the Jews were to be wiped out, and he sent it through all the kingdom, used the current courier system of the day to get this decree out. The posts went out, verse 15, being hastened by the king's commandment. And the decree was given in Shushan the palace, and the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. And so we see the result, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, the result of this was perplexity was experienced. But I want to move on to chapter 5. The story switches themes in the next couple chapters and examines Mordecai's viewpoint. Chapter 5, verse 9 through 14 says this, then Haman went forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Now just prior to this, Esther had already gone into the king and had appealed to the king for her cause and had invited the king and Haman to a banquet. And Haman had just experienced this banquet with the king and queen, and we see him being leaving that. Verse 9, he was joyful with a glad heart. Verse 10, nevertheless, Haman refrained himself, and when he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself, and tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. Yet all this availeth me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting in the king's gate. Then said Zeresh his wife and all his friends unto him, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. We see a man here consumed by pride. What brought him joy and gladness of heart was the recognition, the exclusive treatment, and the prideful experience he had. His joy and gladness came from that rather than from something of substance. Verse 11 and 12, we see him going home and boasting of all that he had accomplished, of all his riches, the multitude of things that he had done, and on and on he went, and how he is being treated almost as royalty. And yet he says, verse 13, all this is nothing. All this availeth me nothing because of Mordecai, this Jew that sits in the king's gate and refuses to acknowledge me. And we see him being consumed by his own accomplishments, by his own pride, and his anger being increased at Mordecai to the point that he couldn't enjoy anything that should have been good. And not only that, he couldn't enjoy it, he schemed to do away with Mordecai immediately. He couldn't wait for his own decree to get rid of Mordecai's people. He needed immediate resolution of this issue. He schemed to do away with Mordecai along with his family and built a gallows to hang Mordecai on. Pride blinded him to his blessings and fueled destructive behavior. We keep going here in Esther chapter 6, 6 through 10. And then in the next few verses, we have Haman going in to ask the king to be able to hang Mordecai. And in the interim there, prior to this, Mordecai had reported a plot against the king, and that had been recorded, and the king couldn't sleep. He had his chamberlains reading out of the chronicles of his kingdom, and this incident was brought up, and he said, we need to honor Mordecai. And we have Haman coming in to ask the king to actually hang Mordecai. We pick this up in verse 6, chapter 6, 6 through 10. So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought, which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head, and let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of the one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man with all whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Then the king said to Haman, make haste, and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai, the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. And Haman proceeds to do this, exactly what he had prescribed. The point I have here is that he misjudged his own importance. His pride and view of himself caused him to see his own importance far above what it really was. In fact, he was so blinded by it that he could only, when the king said that there's someone he wants to honor, the only person that entered his mind was himself. Somehow he thought he had a monopoly on receiving the king's honor. He was so blinded by his ego and ambition and arrogance. And that he, in doing this, in being blinded this way, he prescribed what he would have wished to have done to him. And we see his desire to be like the king. He wanted to ride the king's horse. He wanted to wear the crown, the king's robe, and be proclaimed throughout the city. He desired to even be like the king. And so he assumes the king's honors are meant only for him, and his ego blinded him to other possibilities. We see how that turned out, how the tables began to turn, and he was instructed to honor the very person who he was about to hang on the gallows. What are the results of this? And I don't want to dwell too long on all of Haman's bad points, but it is helpful to see Haman and his ego and ambition and blindness, the pride that blinded him. And we say it's an extreme example, but that extreme example helps us see offsets and helps us see the, in contrast, the benefits of Mordecai when we look at him. What are the results of this ego-driven leadership. Well, we mentioned already results in perplexity and loss. We go back to chapter 3 of verse 15 that I read, where Shushan, the city, was perplexed. This decree went out that all these Jews were going to be destroyed, and it caused unrest, and people were perplexed. They didn't understand it. It didn't make sense. There was fear. There was unrest, and there was uncertainty. People were perplexed. Not only that, in chapter 4, verse 3, just after that, it says, in every province whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing, and many laying sackcloth and ashes. And so we see his decree, his self-centered decree, caused great mourning and nationwide distress in the kingdom, all because it was about Haman and his position and his pride. It caused mass chaos in the kingdom. Results in perplexity and loss. And finally, he fell by his own schemes. If we keep reading here, we know he had to lead Mordecai around and honor him. And the tables began to turn, verse 13, and Haman told Zeresh and his wife, this is 13 of chapter 6 now, Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends, even everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, unto him, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but thou shalt surely fall before him. And so they predicted his downfall. And they said, this isn't going to work out for you. You already are losing the battle. Haman is invited to another banquet with the king and queen. He's rushed off to that banquet in verse 14. And at this banquet, Esther reveals who the perpetrator of the evil scheme against her people is. We'll continue reading here in chapter 7, verse 1 through 10. So the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen, and the king said unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed even to the half of the kingdom. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we have been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he, and where is he, that dost presume in his heart to do so? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. I think we'll skip over the next couple verses. We're going to go down to, we see the king rising up in wrath, leaving the banquet because he could hardly contain himself. Coming back in, verse 10, he orders his chamberlains to take him. And then verse 10, they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. And so his life ends by hanging on the gallows that he built for his enemy. Leadership built on pride and manipulation leads to a downfall. And we see here he experienced complete loss. He lost his own life. And if we keep reading in the next few verses, he lost his sons were all killed. In chapter 8, verses 1 and 2, it says, on the day that the king Ahasuerus gave the house, on that day that did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai, and Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. So he experienced the loss of his possessions and the loss of his position. And it was all because of his pride. All because of his pride and ego and ambition. He experienced in complete loss, and he fell by his own schemes. And so we have rather an extreme example of the characteristics of an effect of a leader who is driven by self-serving ambition and ego. And by no means I want to imply that we have these type of people in our circles or among us. But there's a tendency within our own human heart to allow just a little bit of desire for recognition, a little bit of self-ambition, a little bit of ego, a little bit of this Haman mentality. And just a little bit brings destructive results. And so we look at this as an extreme example. But the question I have for myself and for all of us that are in any kind of position or responsibility where we guide and lead other people, do we have that ego in check? Do we have that self-serving ambition in check? Are we analyzing what is driving us? What is motivating us? We see Haman being motivated by his own power, position, and image. And there's just our fallen nature has a little bit of that. And if we dig deep inside, we can find traces of that, even in our own attempts to do what is right. There can be a temptation to allow that little bit of ego, that little bit of ambition. And so we need to take that lesson of Haman and see the qualities that cause that perplexity and that loss and that national chaos, and be warned about these qualities that can be part of our experience. I want to shift the focus now to someone who we can pattern after, to Mordecai, the selfless leader, and to capture his life and example. Let's back up to Esther chapter 2. Mordecai comes on the scene in Esther chapter 2, verses 5 through 7, and then we'll read a couple more verses in chapter 2, 10 through 11, and verse 20. So chapter 2, verse 5. Now in Shushan the palace there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity which he had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So Mordecai comes on the scene as a Jew who had been either carried away in captivity or was a descendant of these men mentioned here in verse 5. But he was a foreigner living in a strange land away from his native country. And that probably had enough challenges. In addition to that, his uncle and aunt perished, probably maybe in the war for some reason. And he took his cousin Esther under his wing and he raised her and brought her up as if she were his own daughter. And so he was faithful in these, what you could say, less than desirable circumstances. He lived faithfully in this strange country, raised Esther as his own daughter. He gave her guidance and counsel. We see that dropping down to 10 and verses 10 and 11. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. Now this was after she had been gathered in this whole group of maidens that were taken in to be another queen was to be selected from, and she was separated from Mordecai. But Mordecai had given her counsel and said, don't show who you are, don't tell that you're a Jew, because there's most likely anti-Jew mentality in the government. And so he counseled her and gave her guidance. And verse 11 was especially meaningful. We see him being intensely interested in his responsibility. He walked every day before the court of the house where Esther was to know how she did. He checked in on her. He cared about her. And so the point I have here is that a faithful leader, a selfless leader, invests in others. We see him, he could have said, no, I have too many things to deal with. I can't raise Esther. I can't take you under my wing. I've got enough work to do that I can't spend every day walking over to check on how you're doing. But rather, he took time for what was important. He invested in others. And his influence in her life ended up shaping the destiny of this nation and of the people. And so a selfless leader will invest in others' lives, often quietly and behind the scenes, and in faithful, consistent actions that build others up. Selfless leaders will serve as mentors to those they lead, and through mentorship will impact others and help shape the future of that person's life. And so you can take that principle and you can apply it in your home. You're mentoring your children. You should be. You should be impacting their lives for the future. School teachers, you're mentoring, you're impacting lives for the future. And Sunday school teachers and church leaders and business, every place is an opportunity to invest in others and to impact someone else for the good and impact the future in a good way. And so a faithful, selfless leader invests in others. Let's keep reading here. Esther chapter 2, verse 21 through 23. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. So the point I have here is a selfless leader leads through quiet faithfulness. And so we have, because he was faithfully at the king's gate and checking on Esther, he was in a position where he heard about this plot. And he did the right thing. He notified Esther so that the king could be warned. And he didn't do it for recognition or reward. In fact, it was almost forgotten. It was written down in, yeah, this matter was taken care of, but nothing was made of it until we see in the future the king remembered this and then did something. But he did the right thing without desiring recognition or reward. True leaders act with integrity even when no one is watching, and they serve without demanding recognition. And a mark of true leadership is faithfulness in small things. Mordecai wasn't doing this for recognition. He was simply steady in his duty. And if you think about other leaders that we admire, especially biblical characters, if you notice, they rarely start in the spotlight or with great recognition. Think about Joseph. Before he ruled in Egypt, he was a servant in Potiphar's house and then a prisoner and went through many difficult things in a dungeon before he ever filled a place of leadership. Or David, King David. Before he was a king, he was a shepherd boy watching over sheep out in the wilderness and almost discounted for anything he could do. And so we see this quiet faithfulness of doing the right thing wherever you're called. And leadership qualities and capabilities grow in the soil of faithfulness. Let's keep reading here. Esther chapter 3, verses 2 and 4. The next point I have is a selfless leader stands firm in conviction. And all the king's servants were in the king's gate. And we read these verses before, but we're thinking about Mordecai. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him, but Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Then were the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? I believe there was a reason, and we're not told exactly the reason, but I believe Mordecai did not bow down because of his honor for God and his devotion to God, and he would not transfer that honor and worship to a man. And he knew of the possible anti-Jew mentality that was in there. He had warned Esther about it. He knew the risk he was taking here. He knew that his life could be on the line, and yet he stood firm in his conviction for what he believed was right. And we see he kept that through the whole way out. He didn't cave or crumble at the threat of his own life. He stood firm in conviction. He refuses to bow to Haman and risked his life because of what he believed was right. And so how is it with us? How is it with our areas of responsibility today? Are you willing to stand on conviction? Are you willing to stand alone for what is right, even when it's unpopular or dangerous? How firm are your convictions for what is right and wrong? Is it easy to do what's right as long as the crowd is? Or can you be the one to stand up and do what's right even if others are not? Selfless leader stands firm in conviction. Continue here, Esther chapter 4. The next one is selfless leaders inspire courage in others. Chapter 4, verse 13 and 14. And then, again, this is in the middle of a section of verses, but Mordecai and Esther are back and forth communicating on how to respond to this decree of destruction. And Mordecai is encouraging her to make an appeal to the king. And Esther warns him that if I go in there without being called, it could mean that I die. Verse 12, and they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And so Mordecai inspired and encouraged Esther to be a person of courage. He was a man of faith in God and a man of vision for the truth and right to prevail. And he had the courage to go forward even in the threat of death to do what was right. And he challenged others, in this case Esther, to act, reminding her that she may have been placed in her role for such a time as this. And so great leaders, selfless leaders, call others to rise and see divine purpose in every position. Are you called to the kingdom for such a time as this? Can we see that vision and that purpose in whatever calling we have? And do we inspire courage in others? We also see Mordecai waiting patiently for God's timing. He moved forward in what he could do, but he waited patiently for God's timing. And that was brought out in waiting for the king to honor him. He didn't honor himself. But as when the Lord saw fit to bring him honor for what he had done, it happened. And we see Mordecai waiting on God's timing time and time again through the story. And some of us, we tend to see a vision or see something we think should be accomplished. And we need to make sure we're not rushing ahead of God and his timing in what we believe we're called to do. There's a balance between having vision and purpose and seeing what is right and waiting on the Lord to work on our behalf. Selfless leaders wait patiently for God's timing. Two more. Esther 8, 1 to 2, which we read already, and then 7 to 13. In 1 and 2, we see the king giving Esther and Mordecai Haman's possessions and the ring which was on his finger, which was symboled power. He basically put Mordecai in the exact position that Haman was. And we see them setting about to use this position in a completely different way. And this stands in stark contrast to Haman. Verses 7 through 13 of chapter 8. Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen and to Mordecai the Jew, "Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write ye also for the Jews, as it liketh you, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring. For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring may no man reverse." Then were the king's scribes called at the third, that time in the third month, that is the month Sivan, on the 23rd day thereof, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews and to the lieutenants and the deputies and rulers of the provinces, which were from India unto Ethiopia, 127 provinces, unto every province according to the writing thereof, and unto every people after their language, and to the Jews according to their writing, according to their language. And he wrote it in the king Ahasuerus' name, and sealed it with the king's ring, and sent letters by posts on horseback, and riders on mules, camels, and young dromedaries, wherein the king granted that the Jews which were in every city to gather themselves together, and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take up the spoil of them for a prey. Upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, The copy of the writing for the commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, and that the Jews should be ready against the day, that day, to avenge themselves of their enemies. So we see Esther and Mordecai using this same position, this same place of influence, for a completely different purpose, for good and for the welfare of others. And so the point I have here, they use influence to benefit and protect others. And so we see Mordecai, in his heart for his people and in a heart for the nation, immediately reversing the decree that had been sent out of destruction. And he brought deliverance to his people. Leadership is stewardship, investing in others, protecting others. Mordecai used his position to serve and not dominate. And finally, we see a selfless leader delivers peace and prosperity. Let's keep reading here. Verse 14. So the posts that rode upon the mules and camels went out, being hastened and pressed on by the king's commandment, and the decree was given at Shushan the palace. And Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold and with a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. And the Jews had light and honor and gladness, and the Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor in every province and every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came. The Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day, and many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. And so we see in stark contrast the result of Mordecai's leadership. There's rejoicing, there's deliverance, there's gladness, and even people are brought into the kingdom, as it were. Many people became Jews because they saw what was happening, and they saw that God was with them, and there was a fear or a reverence that fell on people, and there were people added to the kingdom. So a selfless leader enhances peace and brings prosperity, spiritual prosperity. The fruit of selfless leaders is the joy and peace experienced by God, God's children in their care. We also see the growth of the kingdom. And so we have in stark contrast a man who was selfless, who invested in others, who sought the good of others, who used his influence to benefit those around him. And Mordecai leaves us an example. In whatever capacity we serve, in whatever capacity we influence other people, he leaves us an example of how we should relate. He has humility. He's content to serve without recognition. He has integrity, refused to compromise his convictions. He was faithful, steady in his duty. He had vision. He recognized the divine workings of God and purpose. He had courage to act in crisis. He was an advocate for people and sought the good of those around him. And he was a peacemaker, bringing joy and prosperity and not grief. And so as we look at these two men and these examples, I'm just going to leave you with a few questions to think about. In your capacity, wherever you're called, whoever you influence, do those around you experience perplexity or prosperity? What motivates your use of your influence? Is it personal gain, or is it the good of others? Is it love, service, and faithfulness, or pride, control, and recognition? In the church, in the home, and in the workplace, people know when you're leading for yourself versus when you're leading for others. Are we doing that? Is it perplexity or prosperity? Are you building platforms for others to stand on and be lifted up? Or are you building gallows for your enemies? Do you lead with humility, or do you demand honor? Are you mentoring others like Mordecai, or manipulating others like Haman? We are in need of leaders and people in all places of influence with the Mordecai mindset more than ever. At home, at school, and especially in the church, we need more Mordecais. And I believe even in the world around us, the nation around us and the people around us is craving people who have the ethics and morals and the qualities of Mordecai. And so you and I are brought to this time and this place. And could the question be asked of us, are we called to the kingdom for such a time as this? Are we going to stand up and take courage and to be a light and a witness and use whatever influence we have to bring peace and growth and prosperity? How can I live this out in the place I'm called to? I challenge us to rise to this calling of selfless leadership as Mordecai leaves us this example. And so we have this story that gives us a choice. We have Haman's way or Mordecai's way. And the question is not whether we will lead or influence people, but how we will. We all have some capacity. And of course, the greatest model of leadership is Jesus Christ. Mark 10:45 reminds us, for even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. And so as we look at Mordecai and his life, and we also examine Christ's example, we need to follow those who leave us an example of good, selfless leadership. Let us be those with influence who serve, sacrifice, and leave a legacy of peace and blessing. May God bless you wherever you're called, whatever place of influence and capacity you have, that those around you may prosper. Let's pray.